So I'm going to be talking about these separations. In India, and this is true to this day, people are to such an extent separated from each other that everybody is untouchable to everybody else. Now when you have a society like this, in traditional Hinduism, I remember the amazement of my life when I met a splendid young Brahmin youth when I was a young man myself, and he was over here and preaching and teaching and so forth. You know his name, but I won't tell you who he was. He was a Brahmin family. He told me when he went back to India, he could not eat with his father because he had crossed the water. He had left India. He had eaten with mlechas. That's to say, well, in Judaism, goyim, people who are not of the holy society. He had eaten with them. Therefore, he couldn't eat with his father. This is a very important point to remember about the great old traditional religions out of which these later creedal religions have developed. The first point then in Hinduism, in traditional Hinduism, what's happening now is something extremely complicated, and one can only feel, well, anxiety for the problem of the Indian psyche. In traditional Hinduism, each caste has its own laws, its own morality, its own place in the society. And the individual is given so many laws to attend to that his whole life is spent doing what he ought to do. And he never has a moment to think, what would I like to do? The function of these laws is to bind the individual to the group, absolutely, so that he is not what we would call an individual. In Sanskrit, there is no word that means individual. In Indian art, that's to say traditional Indian art, individuals are not represented. What are represented are typical Brahmins, typical princes, typical merchants. And the individual dresses in such a way that when you meet him, you know what his caste is. Furthermore, his name tells you what his caste is. People's names are given them according to their social status. The dress that he wears, the name that he bears, and even his physical character, because people have married only within the caste. Consequently, these are, as it were, races. It's a very important point. Even a person who goes to India for the first time, you're there, let's say, for a couple of weeks, and if you've had the good fortune to get outside of the Cook's Tour area and meet people of different social orders or see them, you'll know that's a Brahmin. You can tell when you see him. That's a merchant. Now, the first point to talk about then, in talking about traditional Hinduism, and what I'm going to try to give you is a sense of the impersonality of this culture and how the goal of all this is to make the individual forget he's an individual, to make him lose the sense of himself as a freely willing, freely judging, special being. The highest caste is called a Brahmin, B-R-A-H-M-A-N, and that first A is a long A. Now that long A means related to, having to do with, having to do with Brahman, with a short A. Brahman is the Indian name for that divine power, that divine energy, and it always is always thought of as divine, which is the source and being of the universe. The whole universe is a manifestation of energy, as we now know from our atom explosions. We are such energy, we're made up of atoms, therefore, properly mistreated, we would explode. We are that energy, that's what we are, that is Brahman. The Brahmins are those who know how, through their rituals, to direct that energy into the channels of the society, so that it animates and fosters and forwards the aims of the social group.